Yeah, we on? We on? Yes, sir. See, we do things casual around here at Augusta, you know. You know that song, grab that catfish by the snout and pull that catfish out, you know? That's such a strange concept, you know? One time, I live in the mountains near, in the western part of the Carolinas, and now and then I have a good time with a lot of my mountain neighbors, and there's a couple of young guys that I sometimes go in the woods with a little bit. They're kind of rowdy and kind of hellraisers on a lot of levels, and but we do have the one thing we really share in common. I mean, not that I would be a hellraiser or anything, but is that we just love to get out in the woods and try to learn about the trees and try to see if we can find animals and stuff like that. And one day I get this call, a call from one of my buddies. Wayden, I pick up the phone. Hello, Wayden. I'm just around the house here. Well, let's go to the woods. Come on, let's hit the woods. And all right, well, so I got with one of these guys and a couple of guys, and we were going to check out this whole watershed that we hadn't really been in very much. We knew it had a little stream going down through it. We just kind of wanted to check it out. And we were walking down, we climbed up over this mountain, and we were walking down in this watershed, and there was a little stream going down through it. We were walking down, and the stream would get bigger and bigger as we went down. There was little pools and with little waterfalls coming in of it. And Chris, this one guy, was up ahead, and I hear him say, "Hey, you guys, there's two trout. I seen two trout go right in this pool. There's two trout. Come on, we got to get them trout." And he starts grabbing these rocks and starts going to block up the stream. And then I realized, come on, we got to get them trout. And he had a pistol with him. And he says, "I'm going to just shoot in there and see if I can't get one of them trout. I seen them. They went in right up in there." And I just said, "Now hold it, boys. Just hold it. Just a minute. Let me just try this thing out here. Now you got this stream all blocked up here. Let me just see what I can do here. Now, have you boys ever heard of tickling trout?" Now I had only heard of tickling trout. I've heard that you could put your hands in the water and you could kind of reach and feel around in there, and you could, if your hands were cool and you were real careful, you could tickle them trout and catch them. Now, I mean, I'd heard of people doing it but I didn't really know if it was true. And I said, "You boys," and they just kind of looked at me, and I said, "You heard know about tickling trout?" I said, "Well, now, I don't know much about it, but this is what I hear tell. I hear you tell you're supposed to cool your hands." So I rolled up my sleeves, and I cooled my hands. I held my hands down in the stream, just got them cold. And then, now, what they say is you're just supposed to kind of just feel in there real easy. And I put my hand down in that pool, and the first thing I touched was the back of a trout. And I couldn't believe it. I just could not believe this. And I said, "Boys, I think I feel one in here now." And I kind of reached in, and I slipped my other hand in and just grabbed and came up with a 13-inch native brook trout. I could not believe my eyes. I could not believe my eyes. And these boys, they were as big-eyed as a rabbit. I said, "Get that trout. Get him out of there. Get him out of there. Come on, get him out of that pool." And so we got that trout over, and we dispatched that trout, and I don't believe this. I just do not believe this. And they didn't know what to think of me, and they said, "There's nothing in there. Get that other. "Well, I'll see what I can do, boss. I'll see what I can do now, and I'm the expert, right?" So I kind of reached down in there, and I felt around a little bit, and I felt another one. I couldn't believe it. I said, "I feel him in there. He's in there." Now, apparently, what these trout do, and what's been working for them all their lives, is they get spooked. They quick head right up to the headwaters of the pool that they happen to be living in. There's usually a clump of rocks that makes a little waterfall. That's what makes a trout stream so aerated, is that the water pours over those rocks. And it nose up into these little crevices in the rocks. And that's always been their haven. It's worked all their life, right? And so I kind of felt around in there, and darn if I didn't get that other one. And he was stuck way up in the crevice. I had to kind of barely could stick my head in. I pulled out another one that was slightly smaller. And then those boys, they just couldn't believe I pulled two trout out of there. And they said, "Now try that pool over there." And they started working me like a bird dog, because I knew the trick. Try that pool there. And we worked all up, and they worked me all afternoon up and down that stream. Well, we didn't get any more trout, but they said, "Come on now, we gotta cook them trout. We gotta cook them right here." I said, "I want to take one of them home to brag on. All right, we'll cook the smaller one. All right, we'll cook the smaller one." And so we built a little fire right there, and we got some spice wood twigs, and it had a little fork twig, and we just cleaned those trout, and we put those twigs right in there, And we had just earlier that day, we picked a little angelica seed because I like to use that in cooking a little bit. So we had some fresh, we had herbs, right? You know, and I put them herbs on there. All right, so we sprinkled some of those herbs on there, some of those angelica seeds on that trout. And we built a little fire with some hardwood, just a little fire. And we cooked that trout over that fire. And we shared that trout, and it was like the sacrament, you know. It was a real, real special occasion, you know. And since then, I heard Gene Montgomery talk about out in Kansas. They went noodling for catfish, which is probably where that song came from. They called it noodling. And he says that even in the game laws, that there's a noodling season. And the noodling is you go along on the edge of the banks. And you reach in under the banks, and the big catfish will lay in under the banks, and you just kind of very carefully stick your fingers up in its gills, and just grab it and pull that thing out. And sometimes, since catfish get up to like 50 pounds or more, you end up in it with a wrestling match going on, getting that fish out of there. Now that I have not tried, you know, but you know, I have learned a lot. I was raised fishing. And I saw the world in terms of fish for a long time, you know, like you drive by a stream, oh boy, wonder what's under that rock, you know, under that trout there. And my brother was saying that to me. He says, you know, we used to just, every time we'd see water, we'd say, I wonder what kind of fish are there, you know. But I've learned a lot by talking to fishermen. I don't fish so much now, but I still like a good fish dinner. And I also one of the things is I travel a lot. And to go into a new area and start fishing, it's real hard to get results. First of all, because a fisherman generally is pretty sensitive to the environment. They know what kind of bait they should be using. They know what kind of fish are available. They know what season it is, what fish are likely to be biting. And it takes a long time to get to into that kind of synchronism with the environment to be able to go fishing. So a lot of times I just like to talk to fishermen just because they know so much about what's going on in the water. And you know, not only have I learned about the environment from talking to fishermen, but I've learned ways to look at the world. I've learned whole philosophies of life. Like one time I asked a fisherman, I said, you getting any fish? And he says, well, as soon as I get this one and one more, I'll have two. Now, you know, who needs a philosophy course, right? Who needs a philosophy? And what I also learned is a lot of times fishermen are often very snobby about what fish they'll eat and what fish they won't eat. And it's often regional. Certain people in certain areas won't eat this kind of fish, and certain people won't eat this kind of fish, even though they're all good fish. Well, example, I spent some time down in the Okefenokee Swamp. And there's a lot of people like to fish there. And I was paddling up this little canal, going up the river, and just trying to talk to people, you know, catching any fish, just to see what they catch and what they look like and all that. And I realized also that boy, I sure would like a fish dinner, but I didn't want to buy a license and try to learn how to fish there. But I would love a fish dinner, so I started working on the art of fish bumming. And a lot of people will give you fish, you know, especially if they catch too many they're just glad to share them. Most fishermen are just like that, you know. And so I would just kind of go paddling up early in the morning, paddle up the canal, and catch any fish? Well, getting a couple, you know, not too many, just started, you know. And now if you get too many, let us know now. We could certainly use, a couple extra fish. Well, all right. And just kind of drop this big loaded hint, you know, and then kind of paddle up the canal, and come back at the end of the day. Well, how'd you do? You get any fish? You know, and they've, you know, well, now you got too many now. We'll just help you out. We ran into this one couple of guys in a boat, and they said, "You getting any fish? Well, you know, we got a few of these old mudfish. Now, you don't want them, do you?" And I thought, "Mudfish? What's a mudfish?" I said, "They any good to eat? Oh, them old ugly things." Well, I won't tell you exactly what he said, but what he said was that the colored folks eat them, but they aren't any good. And I think now soul food. I never had soul food I didn't like: fried chicken, biscuits, black-eyed peas, greens. I mean, I never had. I thought, uh-huh, that means it's got to be good. So I said, well, yeah, throw a couple of them over here. See what you think. He says, well, I mean, people need them, you know. And it was a big, big fish with a big, broad mouth. And it had a real dark color to it. And it almost had no tail to it. I mean, the tail just kind of went off straight. It was a real primitive fish. I looked it up later. It's called a bowfin. So I thought, now, how am I going to cook this thing? I don't know how to cook them, you know. So we just brought them on back. And we got back to the boat dock. We got our canoe up on the car, and there was this large black woman, and she was sitting there on the bank. She had two cane poles with bobbers out there. She had her lunch basket. She was wearing a big straw bonnet. She had a beautiful flower print dress on. She had a bucket had a lot of fish in it. And I thought, she will know how to cook these things. And so I started over to her, and I didn't want to, kind of offend her, but I just wanted to find out how to cook these fish. And so I came over, and I see her kind of looking at me, walking over at her, and I think she's thinking, what does that white boy want from me, And I could see her, just she kept looking, and, looked back at her fish pole, and she looked, he's still coming, And so I said, just as polite as I could, I said, excuse me, ma'am, you know how to cook a mudfish? She looked up at me from that bonnet, and she says, how? And I could just hear her thinking, if he wants to tell you how to cook a mudfish, let him tell you, And I said, no, I'm asking you. I never cooked one before, but I got a couple. She says, oh, they ain't hard to cook. She said, all you do is you just steam them in a pot. And then when you get them steamed, she says, you just take a fork and you scrape the meat off the bones. And then you take it and you get some cornmeal and some egg and some onions and some peppers, and you mix them up into fish balls. And you fry them, and they're good. They're good as a mullet, she said, And by God, we did that. And it was one of the most elegant fish I ever ate, And from then on, I was really ready to try any kind of fish anybody was throwing out, And so we traveled. It was on a long trip. I was going down through the South, went down into the edge of Florida, and went along the Gulf Coast. Was out in Alabama, on the Alabama coast. And we had just found a place that we were going to camp on the beach. The beaches get wiped out by hurricanes fairly regularly, so they're fairly open beaches. They just end up being state park, and there's lots of places you can camp down there. So we were setting up camp on the beach, and we just see by the there's a road that pulled down towards the beach. There was a new model Buick. It was a pretty, a real good paint job, and it looked real good. And I see a couple guys surf fishing. Couple of black guys, and they had big surf casting poles, and they were casting out into the Gulf, and they were catching fish. Well, of course, I wanted to go see what they were catching, and what they were doing. So I got talking to them a little bit, and what are you fishing for? What are you trying to catch? You're trying to catch these whiting. They're kind of a kingfish, and they run through here in schools, And while he's there, he catches a fish, and he winds it in, and he goes, oh, it's just one of those catfish, And they have a fish down in the Gulf. They call it a gaff topsail catfish. It has a big tall fin on it, and he takes it off and throws it on down. I said, what? You don't keep them? He said, Now it's funny, people eat freshwater catfish, but saltwater catfish they don't eat. I mean, it's just, people have prejudices in different ways. And I said, you're not going to eat those? He said, no, we don't come. We're trying to catch these whiting. They're the best, And then he caught a whiting, And so I just stood there and talked to him for a while and got a catfish. And then by the time I was through talking to him, he had about three or four more catfish. And we took them back and we cleaned them and we cooked them over the fire. And they were just great, And as we were sitting there thinking about eating those catfish, and I just kept thinking about what those guys might say if someone asked them if catfish were any good. He'd say, I could say, nah, them old white hippies eat them, but they ain't no good. so much for fish bombing, right? Right. All right. Well, let's see. Last night I did a little, not last night, but Friday night, in Friday night's concert, I did probably more groundhogology than most people wanted to hear. And there's just one song that I just thought is sort of a celebration of a groundhog, and that was sort of open up another section of this little talk tonight. This song is all traditional lyrics. I didn't change any of these lyrics, and has a good chorus. You all will get the chorus. Goes like this: "Oh, groundhog." I bet you can handle that, right? Okay. And what's special to me about this song is how every verse describes something about a groundhog. One of the verses describes how the groundhog lives down in a hole, goes down deep, but where the groundhog actually sleeps is up close to the surface. And another one talks about talks about how the uses for the hide, how you can use them to make shoestrings and make all kinds of thongs out of them. Another verse talks about groundhogs as food. Another one talks about just different kinds of names for it. And we'll just kind of get rolling with it. If you all want to kind of clap along at a moderate level here, you know, when you're playing harmonica and singing and talking at the same time, you're busy. So now if you all clap, maybe I can dance a little, you know. And actually, of each verse, the first line and the second line are the same. So if you want to be quick on that and just pick up the first and second line on that, that'd be fine. Come on in. It's a party, right? Shoulder up your gun and whistle up your dog. Shoulder up your gun and whistle up your dog. We're gonna hunt for the old groundhog. Old groundhog. We'll dig down, but we won't dig deep. We'll dig down, but we won't dig deep. We're gonna find that whistle pig where he sleeps. Old groundhog. Here comes Sally with a 10-foot pole. Here comes Sally with a 10-foot pole. We're gonna twist that whistle pig out of his hole. Oh, groundhog. Grab him by the tail and we'll pull him out. Oh, grab him by the tail and we'll pull him out. Oh, Lord have mercy, ain't a groundhog stout. Oh, groundhog. Eat that meat and we'll save the hide. We'll eat that meat and we'll save the hide. Makes the best shoestrings that you ever have tied. Oh, groundhog. Woodchuck, whistle pig, call him what you will. Woodchuck, whistle pig, call him what you will. We'll sell that hide for a $2 bill. Oh, groundhog. Meat on the table, butter in that churn. Got meat on the table and butter in that churn. If that ain't groundhog, I'll be darned. Oh, groundhog. Here comes Sally with a snicker and a grin. Here comes Sally with a snicker and a grin. Groundhog grease all over her chin. Oh, groundhog. Here come Granny walking on a cane. Here come Granny walking on a cane. She gonna eat that groundhog brain. Oh, groundhog. Little bit of cornbread lying on that shelf. Got a little bit of cornbread lying on that shelf. If you want any more, you better sing it yourself. Oh, ground, ha, 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 ha. All right. All right. Well, you know, there's one verse in there that's been a mystery to me for years, and I just kind of started to track it down a little bit. And that's, here comes Sally with a 10-foot pole. Here comes Sally with a 10-foot pole, gonna twist that whistle pig out of his hole. Twist that whistle pig out of his hole. Now, what in the world is that all about? I mean, now I have talked to people about that. You know, well, now you get your possum up in that tree, and you can tell by the little hair in there, just reach your stick in there and just twist him out of there. You can get that possum out of there. You just twist him out of there. How do you do that? Well, you get your stick and twist him out of there. Twist him out of there. How do you twist him out? I mean, that just never made any sense to me. And I was up in the mountains with an old-time neighbor of mine, my buddy Theron, and we were roaming the hills. We were looking for apples one day. We had our packs on. We were going to go up and get a bunch of apples from this favorite tree we knew about. And we were sitting down there eating apples, and We see this squirrel, and this squirrel leaps from one tree to another tree to another tree, and it runs up in a hole in this little locust stump, and just goes right up in this little hole, and it wasn't too high up or anything. And then his dog starts running a groundhog or somewhere over there, and he says, "Yeah, buddy, I tell you, there's a lot of time I've twisted those things out of there, you know." I say, "You know how to do that?" "Yeah, sure, I twisted out many a critter. I mean, you know, that's one of the ways you get them. You know how to do it?" "Yeah, why, sure." He says, "We can go twist that old squirrel out of there if you want." And I go, I have kind of a Bambi complex when it comes to getting wild animals, you know. I just, you know, but here was the folk process in action, you know. He said, "Come on, we'll do that. We'll get that old squirrel out of there." I said, "Well, all right, let's see how you do this." So he went over and he got a little, I think it was a little hazel twig, and he cut this little sapling, and it was a little flexible sapling, and on the end of it had about three or four forks on this little branches sticking off the end, and he whittled them down so there were just little points stuck out about an inch or two, and then he reached it up into that hole, kind of chased it right up into that hole where that squirrel had gone, up to the top of the hole where the squirrel was hanging out, and you could hear the squirrel in there squalling a little bit, and then he just started twisting it, turning it in circles. And what it does is it twists up in the hair of the tail, or in another kind of animal. You know how an animal has, like, you know, like you pick up a cat by the loose skin? Or it'll twist up in that loose skin. And darn if he didn't pull that squirrel out. We dispatched that squirrel and had that squirrel for supper. I was pretty amazed. He says, "That's the way it is when you live here in these mountains, when you was born and raised in these mountains." He says, "Buddy, you don't need no gun. You don't need no knife. You can live off the land if you know how to do these things, you know." And I really had to really respect his ability and his sophistication in knowing how to do that, you know. And I got kind of interested in that. And I ran into it. And then he starts singing this song. He says, "Rabbit in a log and I ain't got no dog. How will I get him, I know? I'll get me a briar and I'll twist it in his hair. And that's how I'll get him, I know. I know, I know, I know, I know. That's how I'll get him, I know. I'll get me a briar and I'll twist it in his hair. And that's how I'll get him, I know." And you know, that was an old song, probably came out of black folk songs that Monroe Brothers first recorded many years ago. And it's a song, probably some of you know it, called "A Feast Here Tonight." And you know, I'm sort of amazed. Here it is in this culture, and it's something I never knew about, you know. And then I got looking in a book of poems, and it was called "Lyrics from Cottonland," and I ran into a poem about that same process. And it was sort of interesting to see this process that I had seen turned into literature. And the song, and it was a poem by John Charles McNeil, and it was called "The Possum Fooled," and it goes something like this. "I was a long ways from home, and I was hunting my cow. She done gone and lost her bell. Which way is she a-traveling? How, you reckon I was supposed to tell? I was hungry, and I was hot, and I was weak, and I was tired, and I was about to turn around when I seed old Rattler, my dog, grabbing at something in the ground. Well, I breaks me a switch, and I twist it about down there, and then I pull to my holt break, and that switch pull out a passel of possum wool. Well, I bless my life. It weren't long, for it pulled out a passel of possum wool. It weren't many minutes now, bless your life, for I was going home with a possum in my hand. Now, knowing his ways, I helped him so he couldn't catch my pants, because he'd not take long to do his due if I gived him half the chance. Well, it was uphill then and downhill now, like a man what was being paid. And all of a sudden, I spies my cow in the sleep in the dogwood shade. Whoo! I hollered, and up she flounced, and her running was enough. And soon I, too, was on the bounce, trying to head that heifer off. And forgetting what was in my hand, I flop him against my shin. And it didn't take long to change my plan when I felt them teeth sink in. Well, first I tried to snatch him loose, but one jerk made me quit. That varmint's got to have some excuse for he's going to quit. So I laid down like I was falling asleep. See, I was working the possum trick. But them possum grins, they was hard to keep because it hurt like 1,000 bricks. Well, when he felt his tail done been set loose, he figured it was time to go. I reckon he judged he's fooling me because he started off right slow. But it weren't long, and weren't for too long, for a rattler counted in. Without hardly a bark and nary a song, he put him to sleep again. Well, now I sopped his bones. I sucked his bones and I sopped his juice. Thinks I, now weren't that slick. Old Mr. Possum didn't have no excuse to be beat at his own darn trick. And that's the possum fooled. Well, let's see. We're in fiddle country here. I've been seeing an awful lot of fiddles, and I got a ballad for you that's a real treat. It's written by Stephen Vincent Benet, and the first time I ever heard it was Barbara Freeman, and it was stood in my little cabin up in Yancey County one time, and just said, "I got a poem for you," and laid this one on me. And since then they've been using that in their she's one of the folk tellers, and they use it in their play that they run in Asheville. If you ever go to Asheville, that's a must. You must catch that play, and it's called Mountain Sweet Talk. And I've heard it now and again, and it just always brings a smile just to hear this poem, and it, to me, it's about a mountain boy who went down to the big fiddler's contest. I think some of you all just got back from a fiddler's contest the last weekend, but it's more than about just a mountain boy at a fiddler's contest. It's about the nature as our source, as our muse, as our source of inspiration. There's one part in it right at the end. There's a line about the noise of the crowd began. If you all were real quick on that and just whooped it up, made a little noise, that would just really fit into this poem just really well. For this poem, I'll be that little mountain boy, and my violin here, my fiddle, I call her my whippoorwill. Up in the mountains, it's lonesome all the time. Soft wind slewing through the sweet tater vine. Up in the mountains, it's lonesome for a child. Whippoorwills a-calling when the sap runs wild. Up in the mountains, mountains in the fog, everything's as lazy as an old hound dog. Born in the mountains, never raised a pet, never wanted nothing, ain't got it yet. Born in the mountains, lonesome born, raised running ragged through the cockle burrs and corn. Never knew my pappy, maybe never should. I think he was a fiddle made of mountain laurel wood. Never had no mammy teach me pretty please. I think she was a whippoorwill skitting through the trees. Never had a brother nor a whole pair of paint. But when I start to fiddle, why, you got to start to dance. Listen to my fiddle, kingdom come, hear the frogs chunking, jug of rum. Listen to that whippoorwill be lonesome in the air, and I'll tell you how I traveled to the Essex County Fair. Now, Essex County has a mighty pretty fair. All them smarty fiddlers from the south comes there. Elbows a-flying as they're rising up their bow. For the first prize contest in the Georgia Fiddler Show. Now there's old Dan Whelan. He's got whiskers in his ears. Kingpin fiddler for nigh on 20 years. And there's Big Tom Sargent with his blue walleye. And there's little Jimmy Weezer. Well, he can make a fiddle cry. Everybody's sitting around spitting high and strutting proud. Listen, little whippoorwill, you better bug your eyes. A tune, tune, tuning while the judges told the crowd. Them that gets the mostest claps will win the bestest prize. Well, everybody was waiting for that first twiddle-dee. When in come a stumbling hillbilly me. I bowed right pretty to the judges and the rest. I took a silver dollar from a hole inside my vest. I plunked her on the table and said, "There's my calling card. Anyone what licks me, buddy's got to fiddle hard." Old Dan Whelan started laughing fit to holler. Little Jimmy Weezer says, "That's one dead dollar." Big Tom Sergeant had a yaller, toothy grin. But I tucked my little whippoorwill up underneath my chin, and I petted her, and I tuned her, till the judges said, "Begin." Well, Big Tom Sergeant was the first in line. He could fiddle all the bugs off a sweet tater vine. He could fiddle down a possum from a mile-high tree. He could fiddle up a whale from the bottom of the sea. You could hear the hands a-spanking till they spanked each other raw when he finished his variations on Turkey in the Straw. Oh, well, then little Jimmy Weezer was the next to play. He could fiddle all night. He could fiddle all day. He could fiddle chills. He could fiddle fever. He could make a fiddle rustle like a lowland river. He could make a fiddle croon like a loving woman. And they clapped like thunder when he finished strumming. Well, then came the rest of them bobtail fiddlers, the Let's Go Easy and the Fire the Middlers. They got their claps and they lost their bicker. They settled on back, drinking corn liquor. And the crowd was getting tired of their no-count squealing when out in the center stepped old Dan Whelan. He fiddled high and he fiddled low. "Whippoorwill, you better spread your wings." He fiddled into the night with a cherry wood bow. "Whippoorwill, he's got honey in his strings." He fiddled the wind by the lonesome moon. He fiddled the most almighty tune. He started feeling like a ghost. He ended feeling like a host. He fiddled here, he fiddled there. He fiddled salvation everywhere. He fiddled north, he fiddled south. He fiddled that heart right out of your mouth. And when he was finished, the crowd cut loose. No, not yet. thanks for being there. The crowd cut loose. And well, you could go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Cut loose. Yeah.